you for joining us. You are Jewish. I am Jewish. People yell at me about what I say sometimes about Palestine and what's going on in Israel, and they call me a bad Jew. Apparently, you can lose points. What are you experiencing as someone who is writing very clearly about your upset at what is occurring in Gaza?
Well, I have lost, you know, some pretty close friends over this, but I also don't worry about having to feed my kids. They're not starving.
Right.
They're not being killed. I have freedom. I really have an incredibly fortunate and blessed life. And even though, you know, it's hard sometimes to have other Jews really not like me because Judaism is everything to me. It's at the center of my life. I've also met so many other people from so many different walks of life who care about the same things that I do, who believe that all human beings are created in the image of God. And I know a lot of people caricature a lot of these people who care about Palestinian rights and freedom as like being anti-Semitic.
Mm-hmm.
But to be honest, the vast, vast majority of people I meet, they strike me as like the kind of people who would have stuck up for us when we were in trouble. You know, the kind of people who are willing to risk something because when they see people suffering and being abused, they act. And those are the people who I want to be around.
You know, it's you bring up such an interesting point because it does cut to the idea of who qualifies as a good Jew and a bad Jew. And admittedly, I don't know all the different things in the nuance of the history here or what happened in 93 at the agreement that might have turned. But I know what I'm seeing. And I have a moral clarity about what I'm seeing. And what I'm seeing, I think, as someone who was raised in Judaism, that's what taught me that this is wrong. What I'm seeing happening in Gaza is wrong. You know, we learn in Judaism, it's funny. You know, you learn that you're the underdog. That's kind of the history.
Right, right.
You know, I always looked at the chosen people as kind of a wry. You know, when you read the history of the Jews, you're like, you're the chosen people. And you want to say to God, like, if you could choose someone else. But what happens when David becomes Goliath?
Yeah.
And the responsibility there, is that what troubles you?
Yeah, I mean, our responsibility is to remember what was done to us, to remember what we would have wanted people around the world. I'm not saying that what's happening in Gaza is the equivalent of the Holocaust or anything like that, but what's happening in Gaza
enough. It may be a slow mo. You know, I saw an article in the Times, Brett Stevens, I think, and his argument was this can't be a genocide because Israel's so strong they could kill them much quicker.
Right.
And I thought, well, that's the most cynical description of a military siege and a purposeful starvation that I've ever seen in my life.
Right. I mean, even Israel's leading human rights organization, B'Tselem, has just come out with a report saying they believe this is genocide. So it seems to me, if we want to remember our history, if we want to honor those in our own families and of our people who were slaughtered and who were genocided, who were starved to death while nobody in the world cared, our obligation is to care. Our obligation is to risk something.
Listen, man. This has rocked my. I feel like a crazy person. I feel like I'm watching something that is so self-evidently inhumane and horrific. And to be told that I have to shut up because I risk the Jewish state by speaking out, I would say the opposite. I think they're putting the likelihood of a surviving Jewish state much more at risk with this type of action. I think they're the ones that are being anti. If you want to define Netanyahu, with the definition of anti-Semitism, would probably have to bomb himself.
I mean, you know. Martin Luther King said that white and black Americans were bound up in a single garment of destiny, right? Palestinians and Israeli Jews, and in some ways Jews around the world, we're bound up in a single garment of destiny. If we want Israeli Jews to be safe, and I care passionately about the safety of Israeli Jews. In the long term, Israeli Jews are only going to be safe if Palestinians are going to be safe. And Palestinians can't be safe unless they're free. If they're under oppression, if they live under conditions that even Israel's own human rights organizations called apartheid, they are suffering radical amounts of violence all the time, even before October 7th. Mm-hmm. Do we think, when we think about all these kids in Gaza who are watching their parents starving to death, who are watching dozens of their family members being killed, is that good for Israel? Is that good for Israeli Jews in the long term? How you treat people right. has an impact on how they treat you, right? And if you want Israeli Jews to be safe, Palestinians also have to be safe.
How does the and look, listen, this is a tough conversation because we are two people that I think see this situation very similarly.
Right.
I obviously see it from a more secular perspective, because I am, even before Gaza, a bad Jew. Like, first night of Passover for me was like meatball parmesan hero. Like, I was not good. I was not good. But you see, you know, all of our holidays, the whole entire ethos for me of being Jewish, and I don't doubt that there are people that have a radically different interpretation than I do, but it's all about, like, we were about to be wiped out. We were in a cave. We had 3 days of oil. And then suddenly, the Maccabees overcame it all. Or Purim, you know, Esther, she was almost destroyed by Haman and the Jewish people with, but she went to Mordecai, and now we wear costumes and do, like, it was always like, oh, they almost got us, but wait!
Right, right.
It's more complicated than that, isn't it?
It's true, because if you read the Hebrew Bible, if you read the Talmud, what you see is that our religious texts describe us in the full range of humanity. We're human beings. Nothing human is alien to us. We can be horribly victimized, and our texts talk about that. But the end of the book of Esther, from which the Purim story comes, also ends with a massacre by Jews of the Jews' enemies. The story of Hanukkah doesn't, and the story of the Hasmoneim, the Maccabees became in power, mm-hmm. it moves from them liberating the Jewish people to them becoming oppressors themselves. So part of recognizing us as human, as Jews, as fully human, is recognizing that we are capable of being victims and being victimizers. And we have to recognize that in order to prevent us from falling into the trap of thinking that every single situation is the equivalent of what was happening in the Tsarist Russia or in Nazi Germany. Right. In some situations, the power dynamic is reversed. In Israel-Palestine, it's Jews who all enjoy legal supremacy and citizenship, and Palestinians who are denied basic rights. And we have to recognize that that's possible, and we have to fight against it for our own sake and for the sake of our honor.
How do we get past those conversations with fellow Jewish people? Like, I feel like it's been shut down, that they're horrified by things that I would say about the injustice of it all. And I feel like I don't know how to talk to even friends of mine that have gone there. And I imagine they feel the same way about me. But there's an urgency about it now because, like, right now in the situation, we can't be like, but Jews are not getting along with other Jews. Like, that's not the important thing. Right?
Absolutely.
Like, how is the world not stepping in?
Right.
And stopping this atrocity. I don't understand this in any way, shape, or form.
I mean,
it's
not,
boggling my mind.
It's worse than just not stepping in. It's our weapons that are enforcing this siege, that is enforcing this mass starvation. In November of 2024, something like 8 months ago, the International Criminal Court issued a warrant for the arrest of Benjamin Netanyahu for the war crime of starvation. Right?
Eight months ago.
And the United States responded by trashing the International Criminal Court, even under Biden, and then under Trump imposing sanctions on the International Criminal Court. And so the message to Israel was very clear. You can get away with worse. And so then for almost 3 months in early this year, Israel cut off all food, all medicine, all water into the Gaza Strip.
It's a siege. It's a military siege.
Yes, that we are deeply complicit in. It could not happen without us.
Then why can't we use our leverage? Surely the United States can't believe that this is in the best interest of the region. And when Donald Trump says something like finish the job, what job is he talking about? What does that mean?
Well, I mean, the Trump plan made it pretty clear. The mass expulsion of all Palestinians from Gaza. And that is official Israeli
government. But do you believe in the people of Israel would second that? There must be a robust...
There are many Israelis who are appalled by this, absolutely. But the problem is, when a leader like Netanyahu can get away with this again and again and again, it actually makes him stronger. The way to weaken Netanyahu at home would be to show Israelis that when Netanyahu does these brutal things to the Palestinians, that there are consequences. Not consequences in human lives. I don't want an Israeli to die. But there have to be some consequences so Israelis see that this is not good for them.
But it feels like they are not capable of being the arbiters of this dispute. It feels like the occupying power is not allowed to dictate the terms of freedom for the people they occupy. That seems inherently illegal. Yes. I don't understand how the world doesn't step in and separate these two factions. I don't even want to call it a war. It's a guerrilla operation facing an actual army with planes and bombs.
Right. And to be clear, I know you agree. What Hamas did on October 7th was despicable. These were war crimes. But the thing we have to ask ourselves is, how does Israel react? How do America react when Palestinians fight for their freedom in an ethical way, in a way that respects the lives of Israelis? In 2018, there was a mass march, overwhelmingly nonviolent, in Gaza. Palestinians did exactly what we wanted them to do. They behaved like Gandhis. And did people applaud? No, Israel put sharpshooters with American weapons on the fence and shot thousands of people, so many people that the Gaza had to start an amputee soccer team after that. When they do nonviolent boycotts, we criminalize the boycotts. When they go to the International Criminal Court, we sanction the International Criminal Court. We essentially send the message to Palestinians that nonviolent protest, that ethical protest, resistance doesn't work. And that makes it easier for Hamas to commit the crimes that they did on October 7th.
You know, it's a situation, and look, and I know what the pushback is like. Israel ceases to exist if this doesn't occur. But I was raised in the story of Israel being necessary for the safety of Jews, which, by the way, if that's the case, we have a much bigger problem in this world than anything else. The idea that a people have to have an armed fortress of a homeland just to be safe living in this world is an absolute failure of humanity in the first place. But I remember Ariel Sharon withdrew from Gaza and Hamas took over. And I remember thinking like, oh, this is going to be, what an interesting moment of opportunity. You almost have an experiment set up. You have, here's what happens to the Palestinians if they choose a radical route, Hamas. But in the West Bank, here's what happens to you if you choose a more moderate.
Right.
And what happened in the West Bank then was not the flourishing of rights. It was the building of more settlements. It was the empowering of settler violence. It was the crushing of the Palestinians' authority to do anything. And I understand, you know, it felt like that was the moment that hope was removed in any real way. For me, that's when I went, oh, I think I don't believe anymore.
I mean, the Palestinian politician who Israelis loved the most was a guy named Salam Fayyad. He was the most moderate Palestinian leader, the most opposed to any armed resistance at all. And when he left Palestinian politics in 2013, he did an interview and he basically said, Israel has defeated me. I did everything they wanted. I couldn't stop settlement growth for a single day. And he said, you know who's going to be empowered by this? Hamas, right? If you actually want to keep Israeli Jews safe, and you want to weaken Hamas and you want to make sure that a terrible day like October 7th never happens again, you need to stop criminalizing and killing Palestinians who fight for their freedom in accordance with international law in an ethical way. But our government and the Israeli government do exactly the opposite.
How, Peter, it's to me, like I can, if there's there are Jewish people who are conservative or thinking a different way out there who are right now boiling with rage at us. And I truly do want to understand, right. Like, is it that they think their existence and the existence of Israel is fragile to the point where that disagreement puts them at risk, or that we're not understanding just how hard they've bent over backwards to make this work? Because that's the part that I don't see. Like, well, we gave the Palestinians every chance and they didn't take it, so now we get to do whatever we want.
Right. Like, I mean, what I would say to those people that are living in the United States is, like, what are we basing our safety on? The safety of our children. We're basing our safety on the idea of equality under the law. The idea of a government that treats people equally, irrespective of their religion or ethnicity or race. That's what our, that's what most Americans believe keep us safe. So why would we not believe it was right for Jews in Israel as well? When you treat people equally under the law and you don't submit one group of people to brutal racism and oppression, you have, everybody is safer because everyone can participate in government. And I don't understand why it is that some American Jews think that equality under the law is right for us, but wrong in Israel and Palestine.
They would say that they have it. They would say that they have it. I've heard them say it. They've said it to me. They've said to me, you don't understand Arab Israelis, they're doctors.
I know, But this is why we need to listen to Palestinians.
Right.
This is why it's such a problem that Palestinians are so rarely on the mainstream media. It's why it's a problem in our community that Palestinians are not invited to speak in synagogues, that kids aren't given books by Palestinians in Jewish schools and Jewish camps. Because when you listen to Palestinians, you stop just talking always about Palestinians and telling them, and listen to Palestinians talk about their own lives, you realize how brutal the experience has been, and you also begin to understand how dehumanizing the discourse of always talking about them without listening to them.
Have you ever been able to broach this with someone who believes as vehemently on the other side as Jewish? Have you ever found a way in that allowed you to fully explain the passion that you feel for this and why you think it's so devastating? And have you had them hear you with not necessarily changing of the mind, but with a grace that doesn't accuse you somehow of undercutting the entirety of our people?
I would say the thing that I've seen has the biggest impact on people is not anything that I say. Mm-hmm. It's actually going and seeing for themselves. And it's actually encountering what it's like to live for Palestinians their entire lives under the control of a state that has life and death power over them, but over which they have no influence because they can't be a citizen. They can't vote. They need military permission to travel around. They live under military law with a 99% prosecution rate. When you stop just talking about Palestinians and you go and see and you listen to them and you face their humanity and you could imagine yourself being in their shoes and you see what Israel has done to them, that's what I find changes people.
Right. Well, Peter, I tell you, this—it's a painful book. Not gonna lie, it is a painful book, but I think it's an important book, and I think people should read it. And look, make up your own minds. You're not gonna, you know, us two talking about it is not gonna do that much. But Being Jewish After the Destruction of Gaza is available now. Peter Beinart, thank you for being here.
Thank you.